This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. We are here till 3 o'clock, and we're pleased to be joined on the line right now by our good friend from ESPN. He is an NFL insider. Field Yates has been covering the NFL for quite some time. He's the co-host of ESPN's Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Field, Steve Tasker, Chris Brown here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us. The first question is always, how are you and your family doing during the pandemic? Is everybody safe and well?
Everybody is safe and well. I appreciate you guys having me on. It's good to be talking some football. We're getting closer to training camp, which I think excites all of us. So we are hopefully trending in the right direction, gentlemen, but it's great to be on with you, as always.
What do you think preseason is going to look like? Games, no games, fans, no fans? What's your gut feeling?
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine games being played right now, and I understand that nothing has been formalized or official, but I don't think it's any mystery how the players feel, right? They have concerns over playing preseason games, the idea of having to travel, and just the incurred risk that playing one or two preseason games, we know we're already down to two maximum, would bring to them. So I think that players probably are going to put their foot down there, and it seems like the kind of thing that the NFL, let's be honest, the owners could concede as part of a negotiation. Because as we know, right now, as we are speaking, the players and the owners are really in the midst of an important negotiation, about as important of a negotiation they've had in quite some time. And that says something, given the fact they just had a CBA negotiation earlier this offseason. So I think that ultimately we don't play any preseason games. I think that preseason will look, I don't want to say mysterious, but I think the coverage during the month of August will be very, very different. I mean, you guys know what it looks like. People are covering every beat of every training camp practice during the month of August under normal circumstances. I don't know that's going to be the case this year. I think we might be looking at coverage that feels almost more like Super Bowl week. You'll have pool reports. You'll have small updates here or there, but it will not be anything close to what we're accustomed to.
So with respect to the negotiations that you mentioned, Field, it didn't seem like any ground or hurdles were cleared yesterday between the two sides, at least in terms of ironing out any of the procedures, protocols, or policies that are going to have to be enacted amid the pandemic. So with that in mind, how do you see this ending up from a negotiation standpoint? Do you see it as one of the classic 11th hour agreements where everything gets hammered out at the very last minute, kind of the way the CBA negotiations went back in 11? Or do you see the NFL as a league having to say, this is how it's going to go, leaving the union in a position where they say, well, what do we want to file a grievance for? What are we good with? How do you see it kind of playing out here in the end?
Yeah, Chris, I think it's almost like this negotiation began at the 11th hour. Not that I fault either side for that, but given the fact that, you know, training camps are scheduled for almost every team to begin 2 weeks from today, the fact that they're having some of these conversations right now means we're sort of already in that 11th hour. Now, ultimately, players, and Richard Sherman took to Twitter last night to say as much, and I'll quote him here, good meeting today with management. We were blunt and honest with them. We will not compromise our players' health in these discussions. So the players have made it clear they want a healthy resolution. That being said, The players also need football this year because it's revenue, right? And I say need as in almost all of them need football. Obviously, there are players that are equipped financially to not be compromised if they don't play football this year. But the players want games to be played. Obviously, teams want games to be played. So I do think that compromise is possible and probably likely. I just think the question might ultimately be, and this is a question that every league is facing, starting the season and finishing the season are two separate issues. So that's my question, is our teams and our leagues, I should say, able to start the season safely and finish it safely? That, to me, could be one of the great, I think, challenges up ahead.
What's the biggest sticking point between the union and the league right this minute?
I think it's got to be it's basically what are the protocols for health and safety, right? How often are players being tested? What sort of testing are they subjected to? How are we ensuring that players who are not in the facility are being responsible? What measures are we taking? How much of a ramp-up period is there during the training camp? So those all fall under the same umbrella of health and safety of players. They just sort of take it to – there's a lot of details, obviously, involved there. So I think that's a pretty simple, straightforward headline is health and safety. There's just a lot of nuance to it. I think that players – and, you know, I read, for example, Jason and Devin McCourty filled in on the MMQB on Monday, and, you know, they laid out a lot of legitimate and fair questions. And they, I think, are speaking for many of the players. Not that they, asked every single one of them, but I think their thoughts are pretty straightforward that other players will be asking the same thing. So I do think there are a lot of health and safety concerns for players, not because I think the NFL is trying to do them wrong, but more because this is a pandemic and it's very difficult for all of us to navigate life daily. And the players want to make sure that they are in as much of a safe space as they can be.
I realize, Field, that this might be apples and oranges, but we've seen some Major League Baseball players choose to opt out, albeit in a shortened season. And all of those contracts, as you know, are guaranteed in Major League Baseball completely. So the opt-out question for NFL players, once a roadmap is provided on what this preseason is going to look like in terms of protocols, policies, and the like, what is the likelihood of seeing a handful of players opting out, do you think?
Yeah, I think it could be more than a handful, Chris. And I am not taking things that I've heard up to this point as declarations. But, for example, Donovan Smith, the Bucks left tackle, a good player, and obviously his role is magnified now that he's protecting Tom Brady for a team that wants to win right away. He said recently on Instagram, he posted and talked about like the questions he has, right? I mean, the questions that he has about, playing this season and its health and safety of him and his family. I think a lot of players are going to do this. What we have seen in the MLB and the NBA is it's not players that are on the fringe. It's not players that are going to be free agents. It's players of all caliber, right? I mean, Ian Desmond of the Colorado Rockies, I thought had an incredibly poignant post outlining his reasons why he's not playing. Well, he's also in the midst of a massive long contract, right? So Victor Oladipo, we know in the NBA amongst, well, you know, one of the names that's now going back and forth on his decision about whether to play or not. So there are all kinds of players in other leagues that we've seen. I mean, Elena Deladon, who I think is, you know, probably the best player of the WNBA, she today is dealing with her own sort of decision about playing or not playing in the WNBA. So we're seeing all ranges of players in terms of ability around other leagues. I can't imagine the NFL will be unique or different from that.
We were talking with ESPN NFL insider Field Yates. Field, and with everything going on, it's impossible to predict the future, and predicting the future is kind of what fantasy football is all about. I know you're the guru of fantasy football, and you host the Fantasy Focus Football podcast. Do this for me once. Just if everything goes off without a hitch, what's last year's rookie that's going to be the best improved player this year? Who's going to make a splash in fantasy football this year? Who was a rookie last year?
That's a great, Steve, I don't think you even realize this, but that's a question that happens to tie well with a piece that I'm working on right now. I have the document open, and I write this piece every summer. It's about guys who could be breakout candidates, and we exclude players from this list who were really, really good fantasy football last year. Kyler Murray, Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders, A.J. Brown, all those guys graduated from to stardom before I could even get them on the second-year breakout candidate list. But some of the names that come to mind on this list, Daniel Jones from the New York Giants, Devin Singletary, you guys might know a thing or two about him for the Buffalo Bills, Terry McLaurin and Marquise Brown, a couple of players who play in the DMV area. So one thing that we know about the NFL is that while it's not exclusive to the first and second year gap, but it often takes place between the first and second year, is a big leap for players. Obviously, this year is different, but usually they have their first full off season, and they have a better understanding of how to prepare their body and their mind, how to be a professional. So I think that we'll see a lot of guys make that leap this year. Some other players that fall under that category, Noah Fant for the Denver Broncos, Deontay Johnson for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Darius Slayton for the New York Giants. There are a lot of actually pretty impressive names of guys that were rookies last year who were solid that I think will be spectacular this year.
Last one I've got for you, Field, because I know your time is short here. Franchise tag. Obviously, the pandemic has kind of thrown that whole process into a tailspin without being able to accurately predict future years and cap room and that kind of thing. So Derrick Henry, Dak Prescott, are all these guys just going on the 1 year and seeing where it goes? Is that kind of what we're expecting to look at?
You know, I think so, Chris. And the previous high for number of players on a franchise tag tender during a season was 9 in 2009. I think we're going to shatter that mark this year. I think it's going to be 12 or 13, maybe even 15 players playing on a franchise tag tender. I think the COVID pandemic is that real and legitimate and impacting these things, amongst other factors as well. But I do believe that when push comes to shove, it'll be a bunch of players who will be very rich on a one-year basis. And ultimately, all of those players are striving for the same thing, which is long-term job security.
Field, thanks for joining us. I know your time was critical today. We appreciate you fitting us in. We hope to have you on again soon.
I look forward to it. All right, gentlemen. Take care.
You bet.
We'll see Field Yates.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL insider, co-host of ESPN's Fantasy Focus Football podcast. You can follow him at Field Yates. He's a great guest to have on because he does keep his hand on, you know, not just the big picture with the union and the players, the union and the league, but also the ins and outs of who might be, could be, maybe gonna have a great season. He's got a lot of stuff on the Bills stuff as well. He noticed in one of his articles about the Bills have the most returning percentage, the highest returning percentage of snaps taken last year returning on their roster than anybody else in the NFL. A lot of stability in the Bills organization right now, and Field pointed that out.
Well, yeah, and in this year, perhaps more than any other, that could be a big advantage, knowing that you've had essentially a virtual offseason, almost no time on the field, aside from quarterbacks setting up their own deals in parts unknown. So the Bills have 88% of their total team snaps played in 2019 coming back in 2020. That's pretty darn good. Chiefs were second at just under 85%, then the Colts, the Niners, and the Steelers. So it's I think it's a more significant statistic to pay attention to this year than perhaps any other year. Oh, dollar fine
it,
for
it,
Steve.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting, too, because on a year like this, when we're having this Twitter poll that we've got, what happens to Josh Allen's contract, Stephon Diggs, Jordan Poyer, these guys who have Pro Bowl years? It happened to me once. My rookie contract was up the year I went to the Pro Bowl, my first Pro Bowl. So, wow, this is going to be awesome. And it was. It was great. It turned out to be a great boost for my career. Plus, it cemented me in Marv's in a plan for his future and the Buffalo Bills and Polian and all those guys. This is our question for today. Which Bills player will make their first Pro Bowl in 2020? Is it going to be Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Jordan Poirier? You can call us at 803-0550 or tweet at us. And we have some stuff going on the tweet sheet that we've kind of started to dip into, but we'll just go from none. From John, he'll say this. John is Mr. Doom and Gloom. He says none of them will. They'll all be busy preparing for the game the next week, which is, well, it's not gloom and doom. That's the Super Bowl. So John thinks none of them are going to go to the Pro Bowl. They're all going to be in the Super Bowl. I thought it was, when I read those first four words, none of them will, I thought, oh, okay, this is a guy who's a Patriots fan or something, right? but he says they're all going to be in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. There is some of that sentiment out there.
Yeah, it's a long – I think it's a big step. I'm not saying it can't happen. I know that it can.
It's a giant step.
It can, though. I mean, we've seen teams do it.
Yeah.
Sean McDermott's Carolina Panthers did it in 2015.
Yeah.
That was a team that did that.
Yeah, and that was a special year because what did they do? Go 15-1, I think. But I think more often than not, and I don't have the research to back this up because I haven't looked, but I just get
right. Just say it.
No, I just get the sense that this is the case, maybe with the exception of a team and a dynasty like the Patriots. But you see these teams kind of take ladder rung steps to the Super Bowl where, you know, they had a great year and then they get to the playoffs and then, you know, they fall short. Or they lose a game that maybe they shouldn't because they're inexperienced in the postseason. And then the next year they actually win a playoff game and take another step and maybe they get to the divisional round. Or they win the division and they're in the divisional round. They get to the championship game in their conference, but they can't quite get over the hump on that one. But then the next year, bang, there they are. I mean, your teams did that to a certain extent. 88, you go to the title game. You know, the next year you lose a heartbreaker in a divisional round.
Right,
and then after that, you're on your way.
Four straight Super Bowls, yeah. They do playing in those games helps you in subsequent years. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. You think about those games all during the off season. You think about them when you're preparing for the next one the next year. There's just no getting around the effect of losing an important game, one of the games that you've pointed to, one of the games that everybody would love to play in. You know, those divisional round playoff games. Man, oh man. You lose one of those, and it sticks with you for a while. I can relate to probably what the Houston Texans are going through this year for, you know, and some of the young players on the Patriots, all the guys on the NFC side too. We did that. We lost in the AFC Championship in Cincinnati, and there are details about what that game meant that still stick with me. It motivates you, and I've said it a million times. The Buffalo Bills of the early 90s would never have gone to four straight Super Bowls if they had won the first one. If Scott's kick goes in, I don't think we go back four straight times. I think we'll go back again, maybe one or two, maybe three times, or maybe three times over the next 5 years. But I don't think there's any way we go back four straight times because the mountain was just too tall to climb. And once you get there, I don't know that the motivation is that easy to dredge back up. To go back, particularly
if you get the reward and the ultimate prize.
Right, if you've already got it, if you've already climbed the mountain and you're already wearing the ring when you go to your second Super Bowl, it's like, yeah, it's pretty good. You know, I just don't see that happening to that team.
Yeah.
So I maybe, and that's just that team. I can't speak to anybody else's team, but I got to think there's some conclusions you can draw about human nature and all of that.
Well, Josh Allen, I mean, he had a Zoom press conference with the Western New York media in the middle of June, the last time we got to really talk to them before they get their break, which is usually the same time after minicamp that they get their break. And he said he's still not over the loss in Houston. Yeah. And he said he won't be until they play again.
I believe
until I'm playing in the regular season, he said, I'm not going to be over it. It's clear that he's drawn lessons from that game. But I don't think he's alone. I think there's a bunch of guys on this roster, and we just mentioned how many total snaps are returning from last year to this year, 88%. Josh Allen is in healthy company in terms of that loss in Houston in the wild card game, sticking in guys' craw, and it will undoubtedly be used as fuel in 2020.
Absolutely it will. There's no question about it. It is absolutely, it's the only thing you remember from the season before. Forget it. When you think about it, it's like, you know, it's disappointment. It's disgust. And all the great things they did, like winning 10 games, playing well on Thanksgiving, beating Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, all of the stuff that went into that season, you just don't remember it. You think about that game and how he got away.
Yeah, the last one, right?
Yeah.
And Where are we on the tweet sheet?
All right, the tweet sheet from Seth. He goes, it's crazy that Diggs has not made a Pro Bowl yet. So my vote is for Diggs, Steph Diggs. He's going to ball. But JP21.
Poyer.
Yeah, Jordan Poyer, 21, will light it up again and finally get the recognition he deserves. Picks, sacks, forced fumbles. Let's go. And yeah, that's alluding to the conversation you and I had in the last segment about what it takes to make the Pro Bowl as a safety. It takes picks, sacks, and forced fumbles.
Yeah.
And if Poirier does that, which you know he's going to be on the field and have a lot of chances to do it, yeah, that's what people see.
He had a career high last year in tackles. He had 103 tackles.
I know.
I mean,
he was for today's that's a rough safety, day, man.
You know, maybe back in the days of, you know, Leonard Smith and Blaine Bishop, 100 tackles from a strong safety, box safety wasn't as eye-popping, but 103 tackles for the way safeties play nowadays, especially Poirier and Hyde, who are interchangeable, that's an impressive number, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's a lot of contact. You know, I mean, I'll bet his off just from personal experience, I'll bet his off season was rough in the first month or two.
But he's not a giant human. We know that.
He's not.
That's a lot of wear and tear.
Yeah, I think he was probably pretty rough in that first 2, 3, 4 weeks off of football. Anyway, that's a lot that goes into it. But yeah, you're right. Then I don't know. I feel bad for these guys. You go out there and they play, this team put together a really nice season last year. Certainly, in the big moments, they played their best, except for that, you know, the playoff game when it turned into an overtime game on the road, which you got to tip your hat to a team that can get to play that well on the road. And then you look at them, this is a defense that was third in the league, and they blew a 16-point lead. How bad do you think that sticks in the craw of Poirier and Hyde and all those guys?
Yeah,
coughing up the 20 points that it took to get them beat, you know? You don't think they lay awake and see? Here's the thing: people go, "Do you wake up at night worrying or thinking about just bumming out that you lost 4 Super Bowls?" I say, never do I wake up thinking about those Super Bowls. But there's countless nights where I cannot get to sleep because of those Super Bowls. I don't wake up, but I stay awake thinking about them.
Yeah.
You're sitting there staring at the ceiling, and you think about the ripple effect of what would have happened. I know that these defensive players, after the great season they had, man, they take it personal. They really take it personal.
Well, you dissect the game over and over, don't you? You go down to specific plays, and you're just dissecting everything to the umpteenth degree. Isn't that the thought process in that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like a frog in a biology class. You cut that thing open and you look at every little single facet of it and study it, and you think about it, and you get ready for your test because it's coming up this season, you know? I mean, that's basically what you do.
That is part of the game of football that, and believe me, I do not have the size or stature to have ever played that game outside of being a kicker, but there are times where I look at this game that we talk about all the time and how fine it is cut sometimes with respect to technique at specific positions. I remember having a conversation with Jimmy Leonard about playing safety, and he was not super fleet of foot, and he said, "I have to be on my technique on every play or I'm not playing in this league." I said, "Well, what do you mean?"
Right.
He said, "If I take a false step this way, and this guy runs a post on me when I think it's a corner route," he said, "the play's over. I'm giving up a touchdown."
Right.
And I said, "Just because you did that?" And he said, "Yeah, that's it." I was like, that's stupid. Like, the margin of error is almost unfair in some cases.
It's gotten so distilled because it is the game in America that young kids grow up wanting to play, because here's the thing, the physical aspect of it garners a level of attention from the male audience out there of guys who are kind of this warrior mentality of guys, you know, being on a team and doing something special as a group, and the physicality and the athleticism that it takes to play. It's more of a beastly game than, say, the NBA, even though the NBA guys are phenomenal athletes, and the hockey guys and stuff. It's kind of got that, you know, kind of that manly man thing going on with this football thing, right? So it's out there for these young kids. So all the great athletes who come up, a lot of them, they're all exposed to it. They all get and the NFL has garnered the lion's share of great athletes in America towards it. And now, after 100 years, the coaching and development at the lower levels has gotten better and better and better and earlier in these kids' careers and earlier in their careers till the time they get to the pros, these guys are polished and their techniques are better. Their attitude is better. Their leadership skills are better. Their study habits are better just because the weeding out process is so developed now. The league is at such an elite level, both in skill, in intelligence, in technique, in commitment, and athletic ability. That's always been the baseline. It's amazing to think about what these guys do today compared to what they did 25, 30 years ago.
There are times where I wonder to myself, just being a hyper-competitive person by nature, that if I was big enough, strong enough, fast enough to play football even at the collegiate level, knowing that slim margin of error that exists with a sport that's cut so fine, and maybe this is really only at the top level more than anywhere else, I don't know if I could live with myself with that. With that margin for error, you got to be almost perfect all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can handle that. It's not a free-flowing game. It's a game where plays happen in 7-second increments, and you better be at your level best and perfect for all 7 of those seconds in some cases.
Well, here's the thing, Brownie. Don't get caught up in it, because if Jim Leonard, the guy you're talking about, makes the wrong step, he gives up a touchdown, he's still lining up the next play because the other guy has to be perfect in his technique too. And here's the thing. You get to that level because you've been successful doing it at lower levels, and you learn, you get better. And not everybody out there, as great as there are players out there, and how – there's no weaknesses on any of these teams comparatively. I mean, all these guys have done the same thing. There's still good players and bad players. There's not enough great players to go around. So don't think because you're not as good as this guy, you're not as gifted as that guy, you can't still play, because there's always room for guys who can find a niche, you know,
I'm talking about me living with myself, with not being able to, you know what I mean? The smallest of errors could be so hugely costly. Well, that's a tough pill to swallow, man.
I'll give you this. Before we go to break, I'll tell you what happens. That happens to every player. When you get into your 30s, mid-30s, when your brain is better than it's ever been because you've got so much experience, but your body is not. And you can think it and try to do it, and all of a sudden things are moving a little too fast for you. You know, you can't catch up. You can't. Even if you anticipate, it takes you an extra step to get out of your break because, you know, you're just not as explosive as you once were.
Your brain's ahead of your body.
Yeah, and that right there is when it becomes sad, and you're like going, man, oh, man. And it really breaks your spirit. It really crushes you when it starts to go that way because, you know, it's time.
Done.
You're done. And that's a hard thing to live with for these guys that have been so good for so long. So, yeah, I see it, but it happens to every player at some point.
Yeah. It's just crazy how fine that game is cut now. I mean, it's a very scripted game. It's a very pre-planned game. I don't think there's any other sport where so much planning goes into one game as it does in football. And to see it cut so fine and the margin of error so narrow, I just think it's a very challenging thing to wrestle with mentally, to play and play at a high level all the time.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we may have a little lunch after we get back. All right, Steve Tasker, Chris Brown here till 3 o'clock. This is Buffalo Bills Radio presented by Kaleida Health. This is One Bills Live.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Welcome back to Buffalo Bill, to One Bills Live, here with Steve Tasker, Chris Brown. I'm all over the map today, and all started with my internet.
Wi-Fi.
So now, I got it. Let's just put it, I got to break rocks with a hammer now to get my stuff up and running again. And I'm doing it, trying to do it in the breaks, and I'm not doing very well at it. So I just apologize to
you're everyone. Like a juggler going from three balls to seven.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm blindfolded. So you can laugh if you want. I'm not laughing. All right, Brownie, should we wrap up the tweet sheet, or should we go do...
We have some breaking news.
We have breaking news. All right, go ahead.
Breaking NFL news. So the Chiefs and their franchise player, Chris Jones, the defensive tackle, have reached an agreement on a new four-year contract. I think, you know, we were just talking to Field Yates earlier this hour, and I asked him that very question. What are we looking at with these franchise guys? Is all the uncertainty due to the pandemic about what revenues are going to look like and what the salary cap might look like next year, does that mean a lot of guys are just going to live on the tag this year? And he said he's expecting it to be the highest number in years in terms of guys playing on tags. But Chris Jones isn't going to be one of them. So he signs a new four-year deal. We haven't seen figures yet. It just came down. Chris Mortensen from ESPN, I believe, was the first that had it. So a four-year deal for Chris Jones. So the Chiefs locking up another cornerstone player on their championship roster. So
they've got done a nice job being able to keep that thing together. Sammy Watkins redoing his deal, which was he had a mega deal when he went there. They redid him and lengthened his. They've got obviously Mahomes tied up. Now they got Chris Jones tied up. They're doing a nice job keeping their core guys together. And even the guy we just had on, Field Yates, put them and said, listen, they've got a lot of guys that are still on their roster who played a lot of snaps for him last year. And that's kind of where you want to be as a world champion defending, you know?
And then the other breaking news, Steve, is the Patriots have just announced their reduced capacity and preliminary protocols for fans at Gillette Stadium this fall. So basically, in a nutshell, you know, they admit even in their announcement that there's still much to be decided and you need state and local approvals before fans are permitted inside the stadium. But they informed their ticket holders today that pending state and local approval, Gillette Stadium will be allowed to have fans in the stands this season, but only at 20% of the stadium's total capacity.
Right.
To ensure proper physical distancing and the like.
Yeah, so not only... Here's the thing. It just occurred to me. I thought, and it probably is true, people are going to be, you know, the secondary market for whatever tickets are available is going to be off the charts, right? People are going to want to be in there. But by the same token, when you start thinking about what you're going to have to do to get into that stadium and watch the game in person, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to stay home.
You know? You think?
I would. I mean, I've seen a gazillion games, so it's not like novel to me.
Yeah.
And plus, if I'm going to sit in the stands, I will stay home because I've spent too many times sitting on the sidelines on the down marker right in the midst of it to think it's going to be all that great a treat to sit in the 15th row in the corner of the end zone. You know, I just can't do it anymore. I'm too spoiled, and I am a pig. I know by saying that, but you know, and for people who have, you know, been there and you're there with all your friends and it's great and all the stuff that goes on around you and stuff, I don't know that it's the same. It's not going to be the same experience. Now, people might want to do it for the novelty of it, but standing by yourself watching a game?
You have a lot of elbow room.
Yeah.
And just to kind of paint the picture a little clearer, if, for example, the Bills were able to allow 20% capacity like the Patriots are announcing, provided all the state and local approvals go through, that would be approximately 14,600 fans in the stadium in Buffalo if the 20% capacity rule applies to the Bills as it seemingly is going to be applying to the Patriots. So,
right.
So that's that. The numbers are out for the Chris Jones deal, Steve. Are you ready for this?
All right, go.
4 years, $85 million. $60 million guaranteed upon signing.
Seriously.
That is a mountain of money.
Where are they getting this money? For Chris Jones? $20 million a year? I couldn't pick him out of a... And I know I'm not a Chiefs fan. I don't follow those guys. And, you know, it's different. It's not like the NBA where you see those. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
He's a good player.
I mean, I know. He's a really great player. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that he's not like... I don't see him on All-State commercials. I don't see him on, you know... I mean, this is a guy who's just a really good player. Man, oh, man. Now, they got... What happens if the cap goes belly up?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm wondering. I have to believe that the second year of this deal is pretty minuscule. And there's $60 million guarantee on signing, so that's, you know, 15 each over the next 4 years. You know, he signs that thing and gets $60 million on the spot. That's 15 a year. So you're on the hook for, at the very least, 15 plus a minimum paragraph 5 salary for a 6 or 7 year guy. I mean, that's, I mean, man. You're already pretty fat right there.
I really think the economics of this pandemic, we have yet to see what's going to happen with it. I think it's going to be a mess.
There is going to be a reaping.
I think there's going to be a mess. Right?
The only people that are going to benefit from that are accountants.
Could we get to the point, Brad, think about this. I mean, I'm being really serious now. Could we be getting to the point where a team – owes a guy like Mahomes, Chris Jones, Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, whoever's on that list, right? They've got all these. Could they get to a point where they cannot pay enough people minimum salary and still get under the cap? And these guys, like, say the cap drops $50 million. So it goes down to 100 and let's say 145, 150 million bucks, right? And they're on the hook for 75 million of it.
Mahomes and Jones.
Right. Okay. So let's say 90 million of it goes to four guys.
Yeah.
Right. So you're down to, you know, 60 million bucks left, right? And you've got to sign what?
Yeah.
49 other guys.
You've gone straight to the scorched earth scenario.
Right.
I don't see the league letting that happen because the big money guys are the quarterbacks who they know they need, and that's why I believe they will spread out the loss over a period of years to justify the same spending that they've always, you know, participated in over the last umpteen years.
Yeah.
Don't see them changing their spots.
You see my point, though.
No,
I totally get it. The league could use it as leverage.
I mean,
listen, guys, that's fine. Because listen, Brownie, even if the revenues go way back up and the cap drops, that money goes right into the owner's pocket. So if the revenues go right back up to where they were plus some, and they would have the cash to spend $200 million on players, but there's only $150 million salary cap. Guess where that $50 million goes? It goes right into their pocket.
Yeah.
So they don't care. Why would they care if it's scorched earth? The players brought it on themselves for not letting them do that. So they could just say, no, you opted out, and we took the hit on our revenues and took a loss last year. We're getting that money back. And that salary cap is what you agreed it would be. And it's your fault it is there.
Yeah.
Or except for the pandemic. But it's your fault for opting out and not taking the money. And not letting it, you know what I mean? So they've got a ton of leverage.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Incentive. They've got incentive to make the cap drop.
Yeah. Even if you keep it flat, there's going to be some tough decisions next year just because, you know, there's a lot of contracts on rosters that exist already that may be backloaded and or third year, we're paying big money when the cap we know is going to be over $200 million. Well, it ain't going to be over $200 million anymore. So you've got to make some adjustments. So you're going to see a number of renegotiations, probably a great deal more player cuts if the players aren't agreeing to pay cuts that or restructurings. So, yeah, come one way or another, there are going to be a lot of more players out in the open marketplace next year, no matter how this thing plays out, just from a simple economic standpoint.
I think so too. And it's going to be fun to watch it. Although, here's the thing too, and we've been talking about this, about how the team's structured and how it is going forward. And the Mahomes contract is great for the Chiefs because it's not for like 3 years before they have to start really paying out the big cash to keep him. But I think the interesting thing about it is that we mentioned this when we were talking about teams and you know, playoffs and how the Bills are looking and where they lost that game and how it's going to affect them. But the Bills have seemed to grow and grow and grow, and they're getting to a point where they're trying to maintain it, right? I mean, they've built this in such a way economically so that they can keep it going. There isn't the proverbial finger quotes window of opportunity. This is a team that should be competitive every year. Now, certainly they'll have good years and bad years, but economically speaking, they're not going to push all their chips to the table and then have the ball bounce bad their way, get put out of the wild card round, and then go into cap jail for 5 years. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They should
be
able to
be
bounce.
A perennial contender.
They should be able to bounce back every offseason. Now, this offseason coming up is going to put that to the test. The one,
right.
Not this year. This one, they're kind of set. That one that with the cap, we'll see.
You have Tre'Davious White, you have Deion Dawkins, you have Matt Milano, and then in the year after that, you're going to have Edmonds and Allen. So, yeah, there are some big decisions looming.
I agree. All right, Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, going to take a break. We'll be back also at the top of the hour. We've got staff writer for The Athletic covering the Washington sports teams. Obviously, the Washington football team and the National Football League changing its name. We're going to ask Ben Standig his thoughts about it. He's got an enormously long and great read on The Athletic, so we encourage you to go to that. We're going to talk to him about it coming up. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown on Buffalo Bills Radio, presented by Kaleida Health. This is One Bills Live. At the top of the hour, we've got Ben Standig, staff writer for The Athletic, covering Washington sports. The Washington NFL team is going to change its name, and we're going to find out what it is maybe at some point in the near future. This also came out, and this kind of time of year, Brownie, we do it all the time. All these guys are coming out with rankings. Well, they came out, Bill Barnwell, ESPN staff writer, came out with his rankings of all 32 teams, which ones have the best offensive weapons. Guess which team cracked the top 10, Brownie?
You're Buffalo Bills
at number 8. Very nice to see that. Very
yeah,
nice to see.
I was scrolling and I'm like, oh, I haven't seen him yet because he started from 32 and worked his way up, and I was in the 20s. No, I was in the teens there. No, and then we cracked the top 10, and I was like, oh, look at that.
Right.
But I think his assessment is fair at 8.
Wait, think about this, though. Last year, they were 25.
Right. This was the biggest takeaway that I had from Barnwell's assessment of the Bills. He said, right at the end, the 2019 version of John Brown could be the most overqualified second wideout in football outside of Chris Godwin in Tampa Bay. I mean, John Brown was essentially the number one here last year and had career highs in catches and yards. I mean, he was over 1,000 yards last year. Now he's the number two behind Diggs. That's a pretty dang good number two to have. And I looked at the seven teams that Barnwell had ahead of the Bills, okay? So number one was Kansas City. Fine. That totally get it. Cleveland number two. Granted, the wins haven't matched the talent, but okay, I can see it.
Right.
Dallas three, again. Top level skill position talent, I get it. So no problem with that. Tampa Bay, same thing. Godwin, Evans, the tight ends, you know, good group, and now they have Brady. I stopped
right
when I got to 5.
Right. All right, me too.
Carolina at number 5. Like,
I mean, they think Christian McCaffrey is the founder of Christian. I mean, they think he can walk on water.
You want to argue McCaffrey, I'm fine with that, okay?
He's a good player.
The disconnect here the disconnect here is at the receiver position, okay? I think DJ Moore has one 1,000-yard season as a receiver in his career. Curtis Samuel does not have anything close to that. And they lost Greg Olsen in free agency. So,
yeah,
I think Barnwell was coming out of a nap when he made Carolina fifth.
I mean, I get what Teddy fifth? Bridgewater, Kyle Allen, and Teddy Bridgewater.
Well, Kyle Allen isn't there anymore. I think he's in Washington with Rivera now. Yes, but Bridgewater, you know, he hasn't been a starter in 3 years.
Right.
I mean, you want to project, okay?
I don't know.
But Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore as your top two receivers, you're telling me that those two guys combined with McCaffrey and Bridgewater are better than Allen, Singletary, Diggs, John Brown, Cole Beasley. I can't get there, man. I can't get there.
Yeah.
And they had him ahead of New Orleans.
Right. That's what I was saying. The next team is New Orleans. I'm like, what? Carolina ahead of New Orleans? Now I'm
added Emmanuel Sanders.
And then it's number seven, it's the Giants.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
they got with Golden Tate.
Saquon helped a lot there, but yeah.
Yeah, and with Daniel Jones pulling the trigger?
Evan Ingram is a really, really, really good tight end. I think you could make the Giants argument better than the Carolina one.
But Golden Tate's my age.
Well,
I mean, he's been around.
A good slot. Like, I think at least what you get to line up with the Giants is deeper than what you're lining up with Carolina. I mean, I think Saquon and McCaffrey are a wash. They're different kinds of players, but
right.
That's probably a wash. The quarterbacks are probably a wash. And then after that, I think the Giants win at tight end going away. Slot receiver is better in Shepard. And then, yeah, Tate's a little long in the tooth, but the Curtis Samuel hasn't done anything for the Panthers yet.
Right. And here's the thing, though. When you get down, you get all through that and you get all those debates done, you get to number eight and you think, well, what about Buffalo Bills? If they put the Buffalo Bills that high, obviously Stephon Diggs is huge in that, but also Devin Singletary. But you think about this. It comes down to the wide receivers and Cole Beasley, John Brown, and Stephon Diggs. Lots of experience, lots of productivity there, no question about it. But then you've got look at the running backs and the tight end. You got a second-year running back, a rookie running back, a second-year tight end that are starters. That's a really young roster to be that high in the rankings for playmakers. And their take on Dawson Knox emerged, and he says he's a matchup problem, even with his drop issues. And he took over when Tyler Kroft didn't stay healthy and Kroft couldn't get back on the field. It was Dawson Knox's job. And that says a lot about what Dawson Knox brought to the table.
Yeah, he's just athletically superior to Kroft. I don't think that's any secret to anybody that's watched this team last year.
Fun article.
It was good to see him there, for sure.
Yeah, fun article. Top 10 Buffalo Bills. Bill Barnwell put him at number 8 in the overall offensive playmakers rankings around the National Football League. All right, let's take a break. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown, we'll be right back. After this break, we're going to have Ben Standing on. He's a staff writer for The Athletic covering the Washington sports scene. He's going to talk to us about the Washington football team having a new nickname. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, right after this. This is One Bills Live on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.